Bonnie Gagne, everyone. This is Professor Amin-Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, former City Councilman for the City of Compton, former Compton College Board of Trustees, and former Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees, and co-founder of the Black World Institute, along with Asar Jabal, a video and audio research center, where we recorded some of the speeches and programs of the Black Liberation Movement and Cultural Movement. And so we are very proud of our library on that. Second, we want to welcome also Brother Joe Hembrick. Joe Hembrick is a longtime administrator and educator for Linwood and Unified School District and Compton Unified School District, where he served as teacher and counselors and the first head varsity football coach for Linwood Unified, and as well as the administrator for the Centennial High School, where he had the mural, the unity mural, of Black and Browns working together put on the side of the wall. And worked very close with the students up there. They came to him for consultation and consolation of whatever issues they were having. He was the man. And then we got Brother Ernest McBride, a historian, archivist for his father's legacy, Ernest McBride Sr. And we're proud of that. He has a wealth of knowledge and information on his dad's contribution to the movement and his whole family's contribution to the movement, because Miss McBride was also a strong woman, and that she contributed by supporting Mr. McBride and just being strong by his side. We have that Brother Ahi from Detroit, from Motor City, strong activists out in that area, and they're trying to restore the beauty of Detroit and bring back the consciousness and the movement in Detroit, where Elijah Muhammad, Dennis Farrakhan, Malcolm, all of them got their start over there in Detroit. So we're happy that Brother Ahi is here. And Brother Rashiki, the creator of this platform, Conscious Corner, and as well as a community education network, where he provides have to sustain this for about maybe 4 or 5 years now. And we are just happy that he's here, Cal State Long Beach alumni, as well as a great athlete from the standpoint of varsity basketball for Long Beach State. But at the same time, a conscious brother that works hard to bring, as you say, each one teach one. And this is his contribution to the movement, this platform of just educating our people. And we're so happy. Anybody else, Rashiki? I can't see him. Rashiki, you're on mute.
Jabal is here.
Jabal?
Yeah.
Oh, good. We got a guest here today. Asar, you there?
Yes, I'm mute.
Asar?
He's muted, Rod. He got to unmute.
Well, we got to call him and kill him. Well, we got Asar Jabal, who's deeply into, like I said, we co-founded the Black World Institute. And
there he is.
Yes, there, my brother. Unmute. He's still on mute. He gonna have to go get his granddaughter to get him off mute. Call him. You got unmute. Unmute.
There you go.
There you are. There you are.
All right.
All right then, brother.
So how everybody?
Everybody's black and blue, brother.
Good to see y'all.
All right, Asar is fresh out of, just coming back from Cuba. And
yeah.
They were in After he make his presentation, I'm going to talk a little bit about Asada Shakur, and he can add anything he wants. But Asada, what do you want
Yes.
to talk about today?
Oh, well, I'm still on urging our people to seek reparations through repatriation and organize that movement, which I think is really necessary, becoming more and more necessary day by day, you know. So we need to go home. And
well, how are we going to do that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. We got to organize it. Got to set up some kind of organization or association or council whereby our intentions would be, number one, to seek repatriation, to return to Africa, and two, to demand reparations for slavery and all the other ugly things that have been done to us, and from which the countries of the West, the colonizers and enslavers, have gotten rich, and without African or Africa, that couldn't have happened. So they need to pay reparations. And since they're the ones who kidnapped us in the first place, they should be the ones to take up the cost of repatriating all Africans in the diaspora back to Africa, which is on right now and in the throes of birth, rebirth, you might say. You know, we see it happening all across Africa as more and more of the leaders there, the ones who are not incorrigibly corrupt, are trying very much to welcome Africans in the diaspora back for a couple of reasons. One is our expertise, our training, education, and two is we wouldn't be coming there as people who are indigent. We'd be coming there with repatriation, which would pay for the reintroducing us into African societies and retraining us about our own culture, which was stolen from us. So that's my beliefs, or hope, more than beliefs, but really it's my hope. And I wish I was 30, 40 years younger. I would certainly take up that effort on my own if I had to, you know, having been there to Africa and understood that people in Africa are more civil than our Europeans. And we know that from our own personal experiences and our own histories, that, you know, these people have committed not only genocide against the native people that were here, but were already here in the form of the native people, then they've committed genocide against all people of color in order to enrich themselves. And now that we're waking up to that fact, and a lot of us are becoming aware that without African expertise and labor, they couldn't be in the position of economically of where they are today, the European countries, so-called West. They're the ones who not only thrived during slavery, but in the aftermath, this neo-colonialism, they have drained resources from Africa and continued their economic superiority in the world based on Africa, what they could drain
You freezing? You froze, Jabal.
From Africa. So, yes. Say that again.
I said you had froze.
Good I mean, question. What? The picture froze?
Yeah, for a minute. We didn't hear the last sentence you said.
Well, I was referring to the fact that all of these European countries who make up the Western, so-called Western world, have all gotten rich off of colonization, and particularly from neo-colonization, where they sucked the wealth of Africa, and they continue to do that up until today. And now we're seeing that.
Froze again. That's that internet out there.
A lot, but some of the African leaders are beginning to recognize what's going on, that reparations be paid, and they're not honoring contracts they had with these European countries through the use of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, which when they loan money, they always claim to be assisting Africa. When they loan the money, it all comes with strings attached, whereby they want these African nations to privatize their government holdings. For example, say the government is in charge of transportation and throughout the country, or health throughout the country. By privatizing it, it makes it possible to sell it on the stock markets of the West. And they would then control that industry in the country. This is neo-colonialism. And this is what's happening. And a lot of African leaders are beginning to wake up to that fact and rebelling, changing. We see that in Burkina Faso and Niger and Mali, which have joined together as a single nation, have sworn to cooperate and defend each other as they established the Sahara region, which at one point was very, very rich, historically speaking, in Africa. And they want to reestablish that, much of the minerals that the West needs for developing artificial intelligence, etc., comes out of Africa, and particularly from the Sahara region, where in places like Chad and Mali and Burkina Faso and all of these nations that are in make up the Sahel or the Sahara, Western Sahara, they have many, many minerals, including gold and uranium. And so African leaders are waking up to these points and recognizing what has happened to them, and demanding that the system be changed. The three nations, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, now want to form their own currency, and they want to partner with the BRICS countries in terms of being able to trade with one another based on their own currencies rather than on the dollar. The dollar has been used by the West, especially by the United States, since back in the 40s, near the end of World War II, where they established that as the tender for trade and commerce between nations. And as such, it gives them unfair advantage over what's going on. So when you hear them using that dollar as a weapon, as they're doing in Cuba today, in Venezuela, in Iran, and Nicaragua, North Korea, other countries, they use the dollar as a weapon, they're weaponizing it, because they know that these countries cannot seek foreign investment without going through the American banking system, where they control the dollar. So that is my very strong beliefs. And, I'm at a slightly advanced age, so it really prevents me from getting out there and doing what I'd like to do, organize not only on the continent, but here in the diaspora, to get our people to begin that movement. I see it akin to like at the end of the Reconstruction era when all those Jim Crow, so-called Jim Crow rules were imposed and people were terrorized by the Klan. And then they started migrating to the northern factories in Detroit, and Chicago, the Midwest, mostly. To Pittsburgh and Cleveland, all up there. Whereas if they remained or in the towns of the South, they were heavily terrorized and discriminated against by the Jim Crow laws that were being imposed on them. And so in order to get away from that kind of discrimination, they migrated to the North. And we need to have that kind of movement today, except it won't be to the north, it'll be to the east, to head back to Africa again. So in a manner of speaking, I think Garvey recognized that. And there are a lot of white people, business people, to it, because the value of black people here in America was recognized by some of them, and they recognized how black people were so important to the economy, and they'll probably reach that point again, even if we begin our return. So these are my thoughts, and I can't emphasize it enough. It's kind of dominated my thinking after all of these years, and the more I consider the more I'm convinced that it's the only way to go. And having gone to Africa and lived in several countries there and seen the civility, you know, we hear all of these horror stories about Africa being the mistreatment of one another and on and on. And this is all the ploy by the same colonizers, white people, who want to dominate Africa and dominate really the whole world outside of Europe, whereby they could utilize their food and raw materials to enrich themselves and control these countries as they did when they straight out colonized them.
That's interesting. Okay, anybody have any questions? Brother Ernest, you have any questions?
Well, no, because I see what he's saying, and I'm kind of in the same boat as Jerry there, because I've kind of gotten up in age too high up there to be trying to make a move now, you know. So I'm just destined to be where I'm at and try to fight the best way I can, you know.
Well, if...
How old are you, Ernie? Huh?
Oh, 87.
Ernest, how old are you?
87.
87? Yeah. Well, I'm a year older than you, so...
Wow.
We both know, huh?
Okay. Y'all both look good, and you both got your...
I think I know your father, or knew your father.
Yeah,
they're living in Long Beach, you know.
That Jim Crow stuff, yeah, he was fighting that for,
yeah,
you know, he was here 96 and a half years when he was fighting that, you know, the whole time.
And
he told me, so you'll probably be taking up the mantle doing the same fights.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, well, yes, long.
Right about that, yeah.
Well, it took us hundreds of years to get out of slavery. I mean, the struggle long continued. But getting back to this question, Ahi, you have any questions? Ahi? He's on the phone over here to the right. Ain't that him in the red?
He's muted.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm back.
Go ahead, Ahi.
Oh, you asked me?
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, we know white folks losing their mind, the weight of what they've done to our forefathers and their ancestors, and what's happening now with them is causing America to implode from within. And we're sitting back and having popcorn and watching these, and this is a critical point, watching these white folks and what they're doing, and they are fighting with each other because one side has they don't want to even deal with reality. They just created a false reality and a false narrative to just justify what they're doing, which is a lie. But I wanted to ask the brother about the BRICS. First of all, that's one question. The BRICS, and who are they? And we know that they're dealing with a country with about 350 million people, but we talk about billions of people using their money in Africa and China. Who are the other people that are involved in the BRICS organization who are going to turn from the Western currency and start using their own? And also, as far as the Sahara is concerned, we know that in the Sudan, there are more people who have lost their lives than the Ukraine and Gaza combined. And I'm not exactly sure myself about who are the protagonists and antagonists in this conflict. Why is it there? And if you could speak on that. And I also want to say we lost Assata Shakur, who was in Cuba with you, sir.
Yeah.
And her life and her story is basically a microcosm of the African diaspora experience in the Western world.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you could elaborate on that also.
Okay. Well, first of all, the BRICS was formed, I don't know the exact date, but it was the original term BRICS was based on the first four and then five countries that formed it, that being Brazil, Russia, South Africa, China, and who am I forgetting? India. So some of the largest countries on Earth, and they were, as I say, as many people still are today, victimized by the having to use the dollar system for investment or for any kind of contracts between not only governments, but between private enterprises. They had to go through the dollar system, and that meant the banks in the U.S. And unfortunately, the dollar, beginning decades ago, was more and more being used to as a weapon, setting up boycotts. For example, we see this so-called trade boycott in Cuba, which is, a lot of the problem, almost all of the problems associated with the economy in Cuba are the result of the U.S. Imposing a blockade against countries who wanted to trade. They, if they wanted, insisted on trading with Cuba, then the U.S. would say things like, well, if you trade with Cuba, then you cannot trade with us. And most countries had a
froze again, Jabal.
Agreements with the United States, then they did. I'm sorry about that. I don't know what to do about it. Of course, these countries got tired of being dominated. As I said, when the World Bank and International Monetary Fund came in with, we're going to help you get out of your poor circumstances by offering you loans. Those loans had came with a heavy price, whereby they would not only have high interest, but at the same time, they would have rules whereby in order to get the loan, you had to agree to cut, in the case of governments, cut government expense. And one way to cut government expenses in these smaller, poor countries was by privatizing what the government controlled. You know, like the government controlled the postal system, transport system, and most of the commerce, the farming, and who gets what, and et cetera, all of those kinds of things. So when you impose that kind of blockade, you literally, the countries that took out these loans were virtually controlled by the same Western or American, in this case, banks. And that undermined, for example, they would not come in and build the infrastructure of these small, especially African countries. Instead, they would make sure that the loans that they provided. Predatory loans where they would take it in places like I don't know what's causing that. I keep moving around so it doesn't freeze up. But for example, in Congo, I think it's the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, just recently made agreements, or maybe might have been the World Bank. Either way, they're both controlled by the U.S. Agreements to help Congo with some of its economic problems, with poverty, health system being invaded by Al-Qaeda or some other so-called terrorist organization, in exchange for them allowing the Western companies to come in and exploit their minerals, especially cobalt. And I forget exactly what the minerals that they want, but these are the minerals that they need to provide, that the West needs to move ahead with their artificial intelligence systems. And so they need these minerals to build their robots, et cetera, et cetera. And as I say, they offer one way to get them. And what they've used, the system, is to come in and offer to help that country by giving them predatory loans, whereby the country, in order to get the money, has to give up certain things that the West needs. So this is how they've been controlling and really as a parasite, just sucking the blood and life and no chance to develop. And we have to look at it for what it is. And there's a few countries in Africa who are doing that exactly that today, you know, and Burkina Faso is, as I say, along with Mali and Niger, are great examples. All of them were very, very poor countries in Africa, primarily because they were being victimized by the French system, whereby whatever monies the government had, they had to deposit it in France, in banks in France, and could not withdraw but certain amounts, and had to be approved by the French. So in essence, the French were, even though they had so, quote unquote, freed these
what's the difference between Senegal situation, Mali, Ghana, Mali, and
these are all
Faso, and what is the difference between their situation and Haiti's?
Well, I think Haiti got the rawest deal of all, whereby the French, after the revolution was successful, where the slaves rose up and overthrew the French colonizers, back in, I think it was 17, around 1800, in that era. It wasn't over, it wasn't one, just 1 year. But anyway, then the French wanted to mount an invasion of Haiti. And in order, then they dealt with the Haitian government at the time and told them that they would not invade as long as the Haitian government would pay them reparations for the lands, the plantations, sugar plantations mostly, that they had lost in Haiti, and plus interest. And as a result, Haiti since then has been having to, whatever few monies it had, deposit those as reparations to the French. So when it comes to such a thing as reparations, we can see how this was and consistently used against Black and brown people all over the world. But Haiti was a particular example.
What role did America have, if any, with that?
Well, you know, that goes back to the so-called Monroe Doctrine, whereby America announced to the rest of the West, to European, that the Americas belong to the United States, that no, that none of them were welcome to invade or invest in the Western Hemisphere. So that was the Monroe Doctrine, that all of Central and South America and the Caribbean belonged, that was the territory of the United States. And so.
Is Senegal as progressive as Burkina Faso and Mali?
Close. They recently had, I think it was, with the French colonizers from Europeans first came into Africa. So Traore, all three of the countries that formed the Sahara, the Sahel Alliance, that is Niger, and Burkina Faso, and Mali, are were all French colonies. And like I say, their system, their monetary systems are still, even up to this day, controlled by the French, by the banks in France. In fact, the currency is called the CFC. So it's a French Western Africa, where most of their colonies granted independence to these African nations after World War II. So my feeling, and you know, it's a prediction that based on what little I know about it, or that the government currently in Senegal is more progressive and more learning from Mali and Niger and Burkina Faso, just not only what has been, what, how historically the French have exploited Senegal, but that they will move more and more once the three Sahel countries establish a currency that will replace the franc. CFC franc. Once that's released, that are former French colonies are going to move toward this new common currency for trade and investment, and also they'll be supported by the BRICS countries, which, as I said before, are trying to replace the dollar as the international currency for trade and commerce. And Right now, I think there are 22 countries that are associated with BRICS, besides the original five countries. And collectively, they make up more than half the gross national product of the world, and they contain more than half the population of the world, and they would refuse to use the dollar as tender for trade between them, and instead they use the individual currencies of each country. In the case of India with the rupee and China with the yuan, and Russia with the, oh man, what is the currency in Russia? I forgot, just off the top of my head. So anyway, they want to do trade and business with each other's currency rather than with the dollar. So, you know, that's why you hear Trump screaming about anybody that goes off the dollar is going to be in trouble. And of course, the dollar is backed by gold, and Africa has a lot of gold, and particularly in South Africa and in Burkina Faso, too.
Okay. So, that's good. Any other questions, Ahi?
Yes, Sudan.
Sudan is, I think it's the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, are trying to create turmoil in that area in order to extract control. So they are one of the closest allies of the West, especially the United States. And so then you can understand how that's all linked together. So they are the ones who are providing weapons and money to the rapid, I think they're called the Rapid Defense Forces. I'm not sure exact title, that challenged the national military government, not government, the military in Sudan. And what has resulted is a civil war, which is just tragic for all of, but all of these conflicts in Africa, the recent conflicts since World War, the end of World War II, all of the conflicts are mostly created by the outside world, by people trying to come in and exploit Africa and, as I say, impose neo-colonialism on it. And
and also corruption by the leaders.
Yeah, and they also set up organizations between certain countries, especially in West Africa. And mostly this was set up, I think, by the Britain and the U.S., the so-called ECOWAS, which is like an international association between many countries in Africa, such as Ghana, Nigeria, I believe Cameroon, and I think there's 22 countries that make up the ECOWAS. And, you know, when Burkina Faso, when Traoré, the president, overthrew, he's a military president now, when he overthrew the corrupt French control, French government, and installed this independent movement in the Sahel, exposed, started exposing what France had done and how it's France is rich. One of the unique things that he brings out, he said, you know, Niger is one of the poorest countries in the world, and certainly one of the more poor countries in all of Africa, and yet is rich in uranium. And in France, the main producers of electricity is nuclear plants, of which uranium fuel that they get from Niger is used to power France. And yet there are many, many villages in Niger and in Burkina Faso too, for that matter, whereby they don't have any power in the villages. So that's the irony of how the French were and the West were, exploiting Africa for its minerals and food stuff and for its people, the most educated people to using them and exploiting Africa and becoming rich, so-called rich, and meanwhile not providing any kind of investments whereby Africa could build its own. You don't need to. Traoré in Burkina Faso found out that, hey, if why should we export this gold bullion to France? And so it's refined in their factories, and people get rich from that. And then you export it. You use that to build machinery different kinds of items you need for food, and then you export them back into the same place that you took the raw materials in, rather than build the factories that Burkina could have that in the country and split it up amongst their own people. Not only would it provide employment, but it would provide them with a means of building up the country. So this is what Traoré has noticed, that he's rejected all international contracts. He's rejected the exportation of gold in Burkina Faso. It stays there. They refine it themselves. And all of this is what's going on there right now. And at the same time, they're recognizing how France has exploited them, and not just France, but the West in general has exploited them so much, and why they have not progressed. And they're receiving promises of investment whereby the BRICS countries will not insist that they have to give up any of their government control over their industries or infrastructure, and instead would help them build their infrastructure up, and in fact build the refineries for gold and oil and factories to whereby you could do your own complete product. This is the same as the British had done in India. When the British first invaded India, that was, oh man, I don't know the somewhere in my notes I have the exact dates, but India was the richest country on earth at the time, and England was one of the poorest. But by colonizing India, by invading it militarily and colonizing, it forced India, who was making finished products, especially textile products, and selling them around the world. Now they made them export the raw materials to England so that England could build the textile factories, which benefited England. And at the same time, it caused poverty in India. So India went from the richest country back in somewhere in the 16th century to one of the poorest countries by 1940. Before World War II started, India was one of the poorest countries on earth. So you see how the colonial system, and then the neo-colonial system, how it works.
Okay.
So these are the things where Africa is only now beginning in its infancy to learn from what has happened to them and how these programs have debilitated them, whereas the BRICS in many cases are offering to come in and build infrastructure, help them build factories for refining their own raw materials and food plants, et cetera, and so that they could employ their own people and then grow their own economies. So that's what's going on there now. And that's why I say Africa is definitely the future. And now would be a great time for us to repatriate because they need our expertise, you know. We have a lot of expertise, people who have who know how to do things, especially if it comes to the electronics industries, you know, the expertise in developing artificial intelligence and not using it as just weaponry, which is what the West seems more and more geared to doing. So.
Good. Yeah, okay. Brother Joe, are you still there? Brother Hendrick?
Yeah, I'm here, brother.
You have any questions about repatriation and all
Questions. I have some comments. In the words of, Marcus Garvey, Africa for the Africans, both those at home and abroad. And one thing we haven't touched on is those other folks that are there, Arabs, they need to get out also. They're doing the same thing the West is doing, having even before the West, actually. I like to praise the spirit of Idi Amin, who was trying to do this years ago. And I want to praise Toure and the sister, Americana Chaparro, and they better get some bodyguards as strong as they talking. I'm sure they're looking to take them out. But anyway, from that conference, what's that Berlin conference, the 1880s, where they carved up
1884, yeah.
Africa like a piece of pie. And France and Germans, the Dutch, with their bloodthirsty, just like Malcolm said, you got French poodle and German shepherd and all, but they're all dogs. And they're just, massacring people through genocide and reaping the benefits from the natural resources, which, if we understood that, and I think, that would help us more identify with, what's going on and what needs to be done. Touré and Burkina Faso has a lot of stuff going on with factories and building cars and all that there.
Yeah, Traore, his name is Ibrahim Traore. So there's certain programs that you probably find on YouTube or where you could see some of the things that Traore has done in terms of Burkina Faso and Niger and Mali, and that'll give you an idea of how this new movement is taking root in Africa. You know, Ghana has offered citizenship for any African American returns. I believe Kenya has as well. So, as these things are all in its infancy, but I believe it should be one of the best times for us to make that move, because really, what would be the expectations of trying to make it here. We've been trying for what, over 500 years now, and we know it's just not going to happen because of this white inferiority in terms of them feeling inferior to black people and thereby trying to project away from that by declaring themselves as superior and it's white supremacy. So this is something that's not going to go away because, as I've said on many occasions, it's not a political problem. It's biological, and it's easy to overcome if you don't have prejudices against miscegenation or whatever, but they do, and we know that they apply it across the board and whatever, you know. So that's not going to change. So people, the white supremacists, bottom line is they like being considered as supreme, superior, you know. It's a comfort zone for them, even though they see that when they check out the playing field, these days the NFL or the courts, they realize that black people, or at least in those areas, are superior. It's just that simple. Melanin gives that edge. And this is something that goes all the way back to the Greeks, who were awed by the accomplishments in Egypt. You know, they were all struck by it. And then the Romans came in and tried to, they really were the first to establish their so-called white supremacy with their whole Christian movement, you know, trying to utilize a God which they invented, and which declared that people of color all around the world were heathens or pagans or, you know, next animals, that's what they called them. And that was a justification for them to go out and civilize, so-called civilize the world of color. So this is something that's not going to change. It's a biological fact, and it's going to not go away on its own. It's certainly not going to go away based on any kind of political developments. So this is why, after all of these years, I've concluded that the best move for Africans in the diaspora is to simply go home and get in on the root beginnings of the reemergence of Africa. That's going to happen. It's undeniable. So, and they could use our help, our expertise, and we certainly could use their civility and honesty. So there's a lot to be said for demanding that we receive reparations for all our labor, and that should be paid in the form of repatriation.
Oh, yeah, come around this way.
You're on mute, Ra. Ra, you're on mute.
Can't hear you.
Roger Key, you have any questions?
No, I'm just listening. It's extraordinary how Jerry presents his information, because he makes it plain and simple. And that's what we really need to hear. We need to hear this type of commentary, because it's more sensible than most. So I appreciate the clarity and preciseness of the commentary.
Okay. Any other person on besides?
Brother Mashinda's here. I don't know if he's just listening or not.
Right. Mashinda, you have any questions? Okay. Listen, Jabal, getting back to repatriation. This is sort of new. I thought when you say that a part of the reparations movement should be white folks repatriating black people who want to go back to Africa as a part of reparation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so not, that's sort of new. A lot of black people are already moving back to Africa, or Caribbeans and things of this nature. And we've done it throughout history.
Right.
They got black people, you know, throughout the continent of Africa. But the point is, when you say repatriate and go back, the question is that as the habit and the and you said they need to be educated on how to go back,
right,
and become enriched in the culture, wherever country they go to, or whatever part of Africa they go to, is correct.
Absolutely.
Okay, now the question is that I think that the movement for those that want to do that, that's fine. But there are a lot of people that are so invested in America.
Yeah.
They just can't consider it.
I know that.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's the challenge, one. Second, it's repatriation. There's a move for, matter of fact, a couple of African leaders in the United Nations Assembly just recently are demanding reparations for them taking African people out of Africa and enslaving them. He made that speech in the General Assembly just passed. And second, there was another brother in Haiti that's over the one of the programs to try to stop the gang fighting and things of this nature. He's demanding France to pay the reparations back that they had taken from Africa.
Right. And
things of this nature. He served something, but I was doing some research on that. But so there is a reparational move from that standpoint. But the challenge is, without a military or without the ability to make people pay, like when you go in a store, you pay because there's consequences if you don't. And see, the problem that we have with the Europeans is what consequences that we can impose on them if they don't pay.
Well, one way out of that would be by utilizing the BRICS, which the West considers their enemy, competing with them. You know, they're always talking down China. They're always talking down Russia, you know, and India as well. And these are three of the largest nations in the world. And collectively, as I said, their gross national production is higher than all of the West combined, you know. So you could utilize the withholding of raw materials and not permit them to invest or make contracts with African countries to exploit the mining and the farming and et cetera, you know. That is the weapon that Africa has. And that is what Ibrahim Traore in Burkina Faso, Niger and Mali have employed in recent. They've denied all of the so-called Western investment. So
the challenge is, well, and from an economic standpoint, they already have Bitcoin. They already have different forms of currency, cryptocurrency and things of this nature. It hasn't caught on, and it's very hard to deal with it. But, you know, they are dealing with those people who deal with crypto and stuff like that. You know, me and Ernest and you probably want some hard dollars. You know, we ain't in Bitcoin. You know, young people do that. I know my kids invested in Bitcoin and things. They bought some stock and then they sold it and all that. But my point is that right now, you see what's going on in Gaza. Now, Trump is trying to say, he's asking the Supreme Court to allow him to get rid of birthrights. Now, that's connected to us.
Yeah.
Because that's how we got. That's how
ultimately we are the target.
Yeah,
you can bet on that.
Yeah, and so you may not. They may be putting us out anyway. I mean, you know. I mean,
as long as they pay our way back.
Yeah, but I'm just saying. Well, hey, man, they you know, when Garvey started his Back to Africa movement for investments. People thought he was talking about moving back to Africa. He was talking about starting industries in Africa and things of this nature and developing the commerce, because Garvey never went to Africa. The point is,
I didn't get that. Say that again.
Garvey never went to Africa. Marcus Garvey never went to Africa. He was from the Caribbean island, but he wasn't even on the boats that went to Africa,
mm-hmm.
and that they sabotaged because mm-hmm. he was looking at it from an economic standpoint. My mm-hmm. point to you is that that's the same strategy. That's the struggle that we're going to have with yes. regards to Back to Africa movement, the mm. sabotage by the Europeans that want to continue to have us here for, if nothing other than just to keep us in jail to create an industry, because we break the industry. If they got rid of black people, see, they ain't not talking about letting black people in prison say, deport me and get me out of these prisons, because they're making money off prisons. That's why they're captives. And so, because I had a brother who went to court, and he said, man, just deport me. You understand? And the man said, well, after you do your time, we'll deport you. You know, because they wanted that money. You understand? Yeah. And so my point is that it's a lot of education, and it's a lot, I mean, repatriation is going to take a lot of convincing, not so much for young people. You understand?
Yeah.
So, but for you know, people of middle age and things, it's going to be a hard struggle. And I want to know, is there a strategy from your standpoint, not just to go to Africa, but to other Caribbean areas that's closer?
Right. You understand? Well, I think my whole point is to informing, you know, some kind of association whereby our movement, establishing a movement with the intent of being repatriated, is that alone will lead to the re-educating ourselves, not only here amongst the diaspora, but in various African countries themselves, who in many of those countries, they want their people to come home. And so strategies can be established as we move along, so we become more and more knowledgeable about what it takes, what the opposition, what the opposing forces are, what are we up against? And that's why we need to organize it. And I realize a lot of black people have gone back to Africa, not a lot, but some. I meant some in all over the place, and particularly in Ghana and also in Mali, where many had actually returned from Europe, and also in Senegal. So, but at the time, they went back without having any kind of organization to educate them, to prepare them for the cultural and the financial and just the physical movement that it requires. And that's why I think it's so important to begin this movement here, by organizing and educating people. And the more we educate, the more the movement will grow, and people are bound to realize that the best move we can make is to repatriate. And so that's my hope, you know. And not only is that happening, can I see that happening here in the diaspora, but I think that'll be happening all over Africa as more and more of these countries become aware of how they've been exploited by the West, and how the West has made them predatory loans under the guise of assisting, and in fact were instead looking to exploit and control their economies. And the more they become aware of these kind of things, and Traore in Burkina Faso is exposing what has happened and how to counter it, and more they're going to welcome us back and make sure that we are repatriated into the tribal systems, which still exist there very strongly, and the cultures and the language. So yeah, it's one thing to go on your own, but then you don't have that support system, not only from the diaspora, but from the country that you'd be going back to. So this is why it's important to begin this movement, I think, by simultaneously, not only here, but also on the continent itself. And by the way, I met Asata Shakur in Cuba several years ago. You know, we went out to a few concerts and things. I talked to her a few times and wanted her to do an interview with me and then present it there in Los Angeles. I forget the programs. There were a few programs then, one on KJLH, as I recall, and a couple of other stations which were supportive of, you know, the Black movement. So, but, you know, she was under pressure, not knowing who exactly I was, or what my credentials were. And she was under pressure from the government, I'm sure the Cuban government, to not be so anxious to. Engage with people, strange was one of the highlights of my stay down there. So, and in fact, my son's mother just in Cuba just called me the day I came back last Wednesday to say that she had passed, because we had both known her and met her. So,
okay.
So anyway, that's my thoughts. We just need to organize the movement, you know, is almost and make it as big as the civil rights movement of the past, you know, and get people to start thinking, yeah, it's time to go home, you know. And certainly if we do that, you can be rest assured that Africa will not only welcome you, but assist by organizing people themselves to welcome and reintegrate us into our own societies where we should have been all along. So as Africa becomes more and more aware of how they've been exploited, I'm sure that'll become one of their urgent things. We already seen that in with Traore offering citizenship, and with I forget the leader now in Ghana also offers citizenship to any Africans who want to return, because they know they're bringing not only expertise, but, you know, their experiences, and many are skills, and those are things that Africans can use right now, you know.
Yeah, before Gaddafi was assassinated, he offered the same thing.
Yeah. Gaddafi was a major mover in trying to reunite the diaspora with Africa, but was totally in support of the integrating Africa with each other, the nations and the monetary systems and all of that. And now this is starting to come to fruition. It's only in its infancy, and it'd be an ideal time for us to make the move.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I mean, Roger P. What about next week?
Oh, next week? We have Calvin Kressel coming on Wednesday next week.
Well, next Tuesday, we have Brother Reggie Muhammad. We're going to be talking about the Million Man March, the behind the scenes thing, and the significance of it. This is the 30th year celebration of the Million Man March, one of the most historical events that don't get no play in Western news, or even among a lot of the young people who didn't even know. It's 30 years ago that there was a Million Man March, because many students, many faculty don't even teach about it. You know, and that's what the challenge we're going to have with repatriation. is getting people to educate people about
beauty. Getting our youngsters to make a 50 million man march back to Africa.
Yeah. Jabal, you're always welcome with your wealth of knowledge and things. And I told him about Black World Institute we put together with the video library and things of this nature. For years, we got some great, great videos. We're going to go ahead and cut it short because I know you're up there in Florida and you're about 3 hours ahead of us. And so get your rest, brother.
But I'm a night owl anyway, so it doesn't
matter. You leave tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Back to Cuba, as you call it, Cuba.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about Asada again. A brother named Dr. Chewbacca, he worked with Asada, and he's going to be on our show maybe the following week. And I'll let you know about that. At least we'll send it to you. But, Rasha Keith, any other closing remarks?
That's it for this evening. We're going strong.
All right. Jabal, you did a great job, man, telling us all about the Brits and all the money. I don't know how you remember all that, but you didn't miss it.
I think I mentioned this last time, but people should look up the name Arikana, Dr. Arikana Chimbori, Chihombori, and then there's a hyphen in Quad. And she used to be the ambassador from the African Union to the United Nations or to the United States One. Anyway, she's very astute when it comes to knowledge of us in the diaspora, as well as what's going on in the history of what has happened in Africa. So look her up on whatever, Instagram or
YouTube,
any of those programs, and listen to her.
All right.
Her diction is perfect, by the way. She speaks very good English. And so, you know, she is one of those who could explain.
Okay. We got it. All right. Look here, we're going to sign.
Well, how Africa's Rust Return.
All right. We're going to sign off. All right. All right.
Peace to you, brothers.
Thank you, Brother Jabal. Each one teach one in conscious corner.
All right.
Good time.
Good program tonight, man. Excellent.